So you might like to have with you the sheet that's got the readings on. We are going to read them partway through my talk, but there it's always handy to have them there as we go along. We print the readings each week in that sheet so you're able to follow along. Okay. Let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. So sings Julie Andrews at the Sound of Music. I decided not to break into Do Re Mi this morning. But we will start at the very beginning, because this is a very good place to start. Today, as we start making our way through the whole story of the Bible, and we're trying to grasp the main thread of what's the action, the underlying theme tune that is behind it, and see the big picture more clearly. Today, we're kicking off this overview of the whole Bible with the aim of seeing how it fits together, how we can therefore get a better grasp of the individual bits that we read and how they fit into the big plan. Now, we don't do this just because it's interesting, although it is, but because we believe that God has given us his word, his Bible, to reveal himself to us and to reveal our purpose and place within his world. So the more that we understand about the Bible, the better we'll understand God and the better we'll understand ourselves and how we fit into God's plans and God's world. So I hope you're sitting comfortably. It's a big book. Now, actually, this morning, we are only going to be looking at the first of the 66 books that make up the Bible. We're going to be looking at the first one, Genesis. Now, that very word Genesis means birth or origins. And it tells us of key beginnings. We read of the birth of our world, of the birth of humanity, of the birth of ugliness in our world and evil, and the birth of God's rescue plan. When we read this book of Genesis, we start to see why our world is like it is. It starts to make sense of that confusion that we see all around us. And we start to understand why Jesus had to come and what he came to do. Because as we mentioned earlier, when we look at our world, it is that extraordinary mix, isn't it? It's beautiful and painful. I mean, our world is amazing. When you look at bits of it, they're simply so beautiful that they can take your breath away. Go to the mountains, gaze with wonder, or go to the countryside at night and look at the stars, or simply watch a bee landing on a flower, or a mother with her baby tenderly feeding it. Our world is amazing. It's beautiful and wonderful, crammed with joy and variety and colour and love. We should marvel at our incredible world. And yet it is a pain place of pain and suffering. Even more terrifyingly, much of that pain and suffering is caused by us. Those who went to Christchurch last weekend heard a film called The Voices of Iraq. Voices crying out in pain and devastation of their homes and their lives and their country. But the real tragedy was that this pain had come at the hands of others in their country. How can this be? Or closer to home, the scary rise of knife crime. Isn't it extraordinary what people will do to one another? For yes, our world is beautiful, but it's also a place of unspeakable ugliness. Genesis makes sense of these two opposing realities and shows their true origins. And it also shows God's plan to bring resolution. It gives us hope. And I think we can summarize the book of Genesis and this talk today in those three words: beauty, ugliness, and hope. So let's dive in and see where those words come from and where they point us to. Just before I get Claire to come and read for us, let me just explain where our two readings come from. We have got one from the first half of Genesis, which is really books 1 to 11, and then the second section of Genesis, books 12 to 15. And the two halves tell different things. The first half talks about the beautiful world that God made and then shows us how the ugly chaos developed. And then the second half of the book, new hope steps in as God calls a man, Abraham, better known probably to us as Abraham. Later on, God changes his name. And this man and his family are to be the ones from whom God's rescue plan, the hope, will come. And the rest of Genesis focuses on Abraham and his family and the origins of the Jewish people who play such a key role in God's story. So we're going to have one reading from the first bit on your sheet that Claire's going to bring now, and then we're going to have a little bit later on from chapter 12, second half. Now, the first chapter of Genesis is quite long, so I thought I wouldn't make you see the whole thing. So we're going to read a bit at the beginning of this chapter and the end of the chapter, but it'll be on the screen and or do follow in your sheets. Thank you, Claire.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, and over every living thing, living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth, and all the birds in the sky, and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath and of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw that he had made, and it was all very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in their vast array.
Thank you. So Genesis starts with God. If you want to know about the origins of the world, Genesis tells us, "In the beginning, God." The author wants to leave no doubt that everything starts with God, and God is the start of everything. He is the author of all things. Just as the rather marvelous book Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone did not write itself or just suddenly appear on the bookshelves, it had an author, J.K. Rowling. So the Bible is adamant that the world did not self-create or just appear. It was created by God. We have a creator. In the same way that everything in our universe has an origin, Genesis tells us that the origin of the universe itself is God. Now, people often get hugely hung up about the creation account in Genesis, and you may be under the misapprehension that science is against the Bible, as if the two things are in conflict, science and religion. But let me reassure you that that is not the case. It is perfectly rational to hold a scientific approach to the world and also hold an equally firm belief in the Creator God, as presented by Genesis. They work together perfectly. The Bible tells us who created the world and why. Science tells us the detail of how he did it. They're answering different questions, and so not surprisingly, give us different answers. Now, we're not going to go into the details of the creation account this morning. We're sticking with big themes in this series. But the key thing to notice here is that the account of creation in Genesis 1 here is structured and ordered. God brings order out of chaos. If you look at the whole chapter, we'll see that in days 1, 2, and 3, he separates things. And then in days 4, 5, and 6, he fills each of the zones he's separated. So day 4, he puts in the sun and moon to fill up the night and day that were separated in day 1. Day 5, he puts the fish and the birds to fill the sea and the sky that he separated in day 2. And finally, on day 6, he puts the animal and the people to fill the land that was separated from the sea in day three. It's very ordered and structured. So my understanding of this passage is that it is a poetic account designed to help us grasp key truths, an account that makes sense across the centuries. Think what a large span of time Genesis is speaking to. This is not supposed to be a scientific explanation of exactly how he did it. What we're to learn from Genesis 1 is that God is all-powerful, that he brings order out of chaos, that he is rational and purposeful and deliberate, and that it is good. Each time something is made, we have the refrain in this chapter, and God saw that it was good. And you heard Claire read there at the end of the chapter, it says, and God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Now, I could talk for hours about the scientific support for a creator, and if you're interested in this, come and have a word with me after you, and I can point you to some things. Suffice it to say that at this point, Genesis just wants us to know that the world originates from God, and it was very good. God made it beautiful. If we want to know about the origins of our world, the Bible declares that it was made carefully and lovingly by someone who was good. Now, the goodness and value of our world, of course, is particularly topical this week. The news has had loads of coverage, hasn't it, of the teenage Swedish teenager who has been speaking to the UN with a damning indictment on our appalling care for our environment. The negative impact that we're having as human beings on our world is on the international agenda, and it's not going away. And it's right that it should be so, and Christians should be part of this. Our world is supposed to be beautiful, and we are supposed to care for it. We too should be changing the way that we act and playing our part in keeping our world beautiful. So it's good and fine to petition the world leaders, but let's also play our part to turn our heating down, to put on a jumper, to recycle well, to walk more. I say this to myself. All things that we know we should do, but often we're too lazy or too stressed to do them. So God made our world beautiful. We need to play our part to keep it so. And then this chapter tells us about the origins of humanity. Whether you think that God shaped humanity directly from the dust or via apes over millennia, that doesn't really matter. The point is that at some point, God decided to set apart this creature. Humans were to be different. They were to bear God's image. Verse 27 of chapter 1. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Straight away, we can see certain fundamental truths about every single person on our planet. We're made in God's image, and so we're precious. God made human beings special to be like him in a whole host of ways. We're unique in the animal kingdom. No other creature bears God's image. And men and women are both equally special. Both bear the image. Both are needed to display this image correctly. Humanity is made beautiful. I love how this children's version of the big story of the Bible, do come and have a look at it later if you like. It's got beautiful illustrations. I love how this puts that first chapter of Genesis. Once upon a time, there lived a man and a woman. They were the happiest people in the planet. True, they were the only people on the planet, but they were still terrifically happy. Their names were Adam and Eve, and God made them. He made them in his image, little mirrors to reflect God's glory. And like everything else God made, he made them good. I love the way that puts it. And just as environmental issues are very topical for us today, so are issues of human identity, gender, sexuality. What does it really mean to be human? What does it mean to be male or to be female? What is marriage about? The origins of all of these things and the key things that we need to know can be found in these first few chapters of Genesis. This is supposed to be our source document for all our debates on identity and meaning and purpose. Let's delve into God's word and discover what he intended, how we were meant to be, what his design truly was. God declares that humanity is beautiful. We're made in God's image, each one, male and female, beautiful in him. So a human being is precious and valuable. Whoever they are, they still bear the stamp of God, their creator. So these first few chapters of Genesis really speak into the issues of our age. They call us to see people differently. They challenge us about things like abortion and euthanasia. Genesis wants us to ask whether these are really issues of choice and freedom, or actually choices that should be made on the basis of human value and worth and sanctity of life. And this is a book we need to grapple with if we want to know what God thinks about such things. Genesis declares that human beings are beautiful and made in God's image. So the first key word we have here in Genesis 1 and 2 is beautiful. The world was good and beautiful as God made it. But as we saw at the beginning, that's only half the description of our world, isn't it, as we know it? How did we get from this beauty to where we are now? And we discover this in Genesis chapter 3 and what the Bible calls, or the church calls, the fall. This is where things start to get ugly. As we looked at a little last week, Adam and Eve only had one restriction in this beautiful paradise, and that they were not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But the temptation was too much. The serpent threw doubt on God's motives in making this law, and so he persuaded Eve to disobey God. She eats the fruit and gives it to Adam. The serpent tells Eve that if she does this, she'll become like God. And that's why she gives in. But it was an ugly day. Adam and Eve reject the command of the good creator. They choose to disobey. And this is the essence of sin. Wanting to be God ourselves. Deciding to ignore what God says. And deciding instead that we're going to be the ones who make the decisions, who decide what is right and wrong. And so humankind falls from innocence to disobedience, and God throws them out of the garden. In this new ugly state, it's no longer possible for them to stay in close intimacy with the holy, perfect God. And they're no longer allowed to eat from the tree of life. Death will instead be their new reality. Adam and Eve are cursed, the serpent is cursed, and the very ground they stand on is cursed. Even our world is now ugly. But there is a note of hope in the darkness. Even as Eve is being cursed, there is a promise that the offspring of Eve will crush the head of the serpent. And we're left to wonder, who will this be? How will it happen? If we want to know where the ugliness and the evil of our world comes from, the origin is shown here clearly in the book of Genesis with the fall of humankind. Individually and collectively, we always choose our own way. We want to do things our way. The number of funerals I do where people want to play, I did it my way. That is the essence of human rebellion, choosing our own path. And in case we think Adam and Eve were some kind of a random blip and actually God just chose the wrong people to start it off, actually, Genesis 4 to 11 shows us how this new human ugliness just escalates and spirals out of control. Murder enters the world only in chapter 4. Cain kills his brother Abel in a jealous rage, and things get worse. In fact, things are so ugly by chapter 6 that God decides to wipe the slate completely clean and start again, perhaps with a better good guy, with Noah and his family. Hence, we have Noah and the Ark and the Flood. But actually, despite the clean start, Noah turns out to be as ugly as everybody else, and the evil spreads. And the first half of Genesis ends with the Tower of Babel, a massive symbol of human defiance and rejection of God. We can build this great tower. We can make a name for ourselves. It's human pride at its ugliest. But God comes down, as the Bible puts it, to see this great tower, and just confuses the language. Scatters them across the world to restrict the ugliness. It's an ugly time, and it looks like things are only going to get uglier. But God has not given up on humanity, on the beautiful people that he made. And so there is hope. God calls a man, Abram, as I said, better known as Abraham. And we're going to hear now that call in chapter 12, the other reading that you've got on your sheet. Thank you, Claire.
The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Adam went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abraham and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him.
Thank you. Hope. God calls a specific man, Abraham, and makes enormous promises to him. I don't know if you noticed those as Claire read them. Verse 2. God says he'll make them into him into a great nation. And then verse 2 and 3, God will bless not only him, but all peoples on earth through him. Now that's some blessing. And verse 7, he promises him a land. Keep those three promises in mind as we go through this course, because they'll appear again and again. People, place, and blessing. God's people in God's place under God's blessing. This is the hope that God sets before us. But of course, nothing is ever smooth. Abraham and Sarah don't even have one child at this point, let alone enough to start a nation, and there seem to be lots of other people in the land that God said they could have. Where's this blessing going to come from? How do we know that Abraham won't fail and turn out to be just as ugly as everybody else? And of course, as we go through the story, he does. He tries to pass his wife off as his sister to protect himself, and later takes the child thing into his own hands and has a child with his wife's servant because Sarah hasn't had one yet. But there's still hope, because what happens is that God takes matters into his own hands. It is God who makes a covenant with Abraham. Now the word covenant can also be translated testament. So the two parts of the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, are also the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. And a covenant is a formal treaty, a legal binding contract, very familiar in the ancient world. The parties promised various things to one another, and then they had what was called a blood path ceremony, where you took a whole load of animals and chopped them in half and put the halves on the different sides, and then you walked down the middle as a symbol that if you didn't keep the promises of this covenant, this would happen to you. But what's extraordinary in this covenant is that God does all the promising. In fact, it's just God, or the symbol of God, who walks between the animals. Abraham does nothing. He is simply chosen to receive the promises of God. In fact, God even chooses to call himself the God of Abraham. It becomes his name. Extraordinary, really, that God would choose to identify himself as the God of a man. Later on, Abraham is called to walk faithfully in God's ways. He's given a sign, the sign of circumcision. But this is long after God has given him these extraordinary promises that are to bless all of humankind. Now, even that doesn't mean that it's all smooth sailing from there on in. Far from it. If we learn anything from the rest of Genesis, it's that God tends to work through the difficulties and the unlikely. All the key women in Genesis are barren, and God has to do something spectacular to bless them with children. Abraham and Sarah have to wait till Abraham's 100 before they get a son. And even after he's arrived, God tests him and asks him to sacrifice this precious child, Isaac. Thankfully, it is just a test. And at the last minute, read more in Genesis 22, God steps in. God provides the sacrifice that is needed. But it does foreshadow that later sacrifice, also on a hill, that we read about in the Gospels, where God provides himself, his own son, as the ultimate sacrifice. Genesis gives us these glimpses of what's to come in the future. Genesis then continues with the history of Abraham's family, his son Isaac, his two sons, Esau and Jacob, and then Jacob's 12 sons, the ones you've no doubt sung about in the multicolored Technicolor Dreamcoat. It's all pretty much straight from the chapters of Genesis. And the story of Joseph and his dreamcoat takes up about a quarter of the book of Genesis. It's a big tale here, and it's a tale of brotherly jealousy, God's sovereignty, and the way that God brings good out of ugliness. When Jacob dies, and at the end of the story, and Joseph's brothers suddenly worry if Joseph's going to turn on them, Joseph says to them, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." But we also see how God works in the unexpected and undeserving ways. Jacob is a deceiver and a cheater, but he's chosen over Esau. Joseph's the hero in the story, the last half of Genesis. You'd think that he would be the one that God would choose to carry on his son's line. But no, God chooses the line of Judah to be the line of the Messiah. Judah, who accidentally sleeps with his daughter-in-law when she disguises herself as a prostitute on the road to try and catch him out. And it's through one of the twins born to her, through this really ugly encounter, that actually is the line of Jesus. Genesis doesn't try and hide the ugliness of the human race, but it tells us how God brings beauty out of it. And time again, we're pointed to that word of hope, how God will promise blessing through Abraham. Genesis shows us that there is hope. Whatever humans do, despite us, God is committed to restoring beauty from ugliness. And it often is in these unexpected ways. So where does that leave us this morning? Well, first of all, can I encourage you to follow along in the Bible course over the next couple of months? If you're not part of a group that's doing it, why not read the passages that go with the material? Again, I've printed off this week's passages. There's a pile of green bookmarks this week for the week material for week two. Do pick one up so you can read along and get a sense of the big picture. And if you're not in a group, why not watch the videos anyway? They're online on our church website. Natalie, I think I just put them up on the screen. So if you go on the front page of our website, you can see the Bible course logo there. If you click on that, you'll be taken to a file, and you can see there that is where the course starts, and you can just watch them online there. I suggest you choose the lower resolution ones. They'll probably stream better. So do follow along if you're not able to be part of a group. But in terms of God's word to us here this morning, I think Genesis really challenges us to think carefully about the world we see around us. Why do we think like we do? Why do we think the world is like it is? What have we got wrong? What assumptions are we making? Do they really reflect what the Bible tells us about the world and about humanity? I wonder if we're honest that some of us, our thinking is perhaps more shaped by the BBC than the Bible. We need to be people who think and take time to discover our origins and what God has told us about humanity. Genesis calls us to take seriously both the intrinsic dignity and beauty of the human race and also the deep-seated ugliness. We need to be real about both. And we're all like that. You are all beautiful and ugly. And so am I. We're all that complicated mixture of beauty and ugliness. But thanks be to God, there is hope. There is a way through. God promises that he will bring blessing to the whole world. And as we make our way through the Bible story, we'll discover the building blocks of how that is possible. But we do not need to despair. God can work in and through our mess to bring beauty. So we need to stand on his promises and take seriously his words. Shall we pray, if the band would like to?